World. Today's daf in the Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, is daf Tzadik Hey, and we're a little bit on the bottom, Tzadik Dalet Amud Beit. So if you'll just look back there, and the last words on the last line. So we've been talking about the din of Gnevas Das. And that was part of the sugya about whether you're allowed to sell something that didn't have the Gittat Nasha removed and whether there was a chance that a Yisro would buy. And we had the whole discussion of towns that had their own WhatsApp group and towns that didn't have a WhatsApp group and how you can allow buying from a non-kosher butcher and so on and so forth. Today, we're going to go deeper into those questions, see rather shockingly how seriously Chazal actually believed in the Torah. You know, we don't believe in the Torah. We believe in things like Heksher's or what the Rav says or whatever. But in those days, they actually believed God. And, you know, he said that you're supposed to rely on Rove. And they trusted him. It's incredible to watch. But anyway, okay, there's always these amazing new things you learn about what life used to be like. So anyway, we're at the bottom over here, right at the last words. And we want to know when we have to take seriously a warning that maybe there is non-kosher food in the marketplace. So anyway, there was this butcher in town, and there were two Jewish butchers, you know. So there was this butcher in town who says to a friend of his, "Well, it's such a shame that you and I can't get along, you bum. And because, you know, if only you had kept up decent relations with me, then I would have let you had a piece of that incredible shor I had yesterday. It had been fattened up for months, and I would have let you have some of that meat, and this was like stuff you've never seen." "Ah, that," says the other guy. Shufre, I had the best parts of that shor. So you think you can keep me out of it?" So the guy says to him, "Where did you get the best parts?" "Well, I bought it at the non-kosher butcher who had bought it from you, and he gave me as much as I wanted. This love on 20 of it kachavim. It was pretty good." "Oh," says the other butcher, "well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, because actually I made two. The one I sold to him was pure nevelos." "Hope you enjoyed. So that one, treyavde, and ahu. So that one was the treifa one." So anyway, so now the question is, if this guy is claiming that he had actually let an animal that was treifa into the market, and that was supposed to be a big no-no. I mean, this was supposed to be a place where there's a WhatsApp group and so on. And here he's claiming that he had released the treifas to the marketplace. So do we have to worry? Then Aser now the meat? Oh, my Rebbe, look, because it is nuts. Okay, so even if he was also Shlok Hogan, now we're going to see that there's two different ways of hearing what Rebbe said. So initially, we're saying there's one guy in town, and he actually, even if we believe him, he sold this meat. So because of that, we should answer the whole town. I mean, the bottom line is that certainly the rove is kosher meat, and there's this one guy, he claims that he let non-kosher meat into the marketplace. And I don't think that we have to worry about that getting out into the market. And therefore, yeah, okay, don't buy it maybe from this guy. That could be. But as far as worrying that the whole market is flooded with non-kosher meat, we don't have to worry about that. We've got a big market over here, and we should answer kol ha-makulin. The makulin are the smaller markets that are selling meat, but they don't do their own shechita. So I don't see any reason to worry about that. Now, this is Rebbe. This is Rebbe l'shitase, because Rebbe l'taimi, Rebbe said that in a city where the whole makolin market is supplied by Tabachei Yisrael, so all of the shechtim in town, all of the slaughterhouses are kosher. So then, basar hanimtza biyad oved kochavim is mutar. So whatever meat you buy in town, since the people that are selling in the Makolin do not do their own shechita, and since the most of the butchers here are kosher butchers, we don't have to worry about maybe there's a trefa in town. And therefore, just because this guy said it, we don't need to worry about it. That was Rebbe's shita. So we don't have to worry about a little bit of trefa meat that got onto the market. Most of the meat is kosher. But there's another lashon in Rebbe, in which Rebbe said, Ikri Amri, Omar Rebbe, Mipnei Shotas, listen, this guy is obviously, he doesn't care what he says, you know, and he just wants to upset the other butcher and tell him that he was eating trefus meat. We don't believe a word he said anyway. So he doesn't care if the, you know, everybody out in the street is worried. Maybe he really did this. He's a shaita. So because of that, we should worry about him. All he wanted to do was get the other guy upset. We should aser the meat, which is mashma, that in the event that he was telling the truth, that actually we would have to worry. So, taima dechavin litziri lechavre. I mean, Rebbe's only saying the reason that there's no problem today is because we don't really believe that this guy sold non-kosher meat. But if it wouldn't have been for that, then it would have been usher. But I thought that Rebbe Shita is, in this version, this Rebbe Shita now becomes a question. Vatanya Rebbe Omer, in a city where you have the makolin supplied entirely by Tabachei Yisrael, then any meat that you find in the non-kosher stores, Biado Vikochavim, is considered to be mutter because we don't have a problem of a rove of non-kosher meat. Yes, that's true. But that's only where we have no basis to say that there was non-kosher meat in the market. So we're saying, why worry about it? But in this case, where the guy is claiming, and if he were telling the truth, we would have a chazaka that there's iser in town, then Rebbe wouldn't have said it. So shani hacha, that if we had believed the guy, then we would have known this chazak isura. It means that there was definitely non-kosher meat in town. And there, inochinami, we would aser it. Now, perhaps the reason that we would aser, we're going to get into this more later, is because of the old Gavi rule, which is kol kavua kemechta al mechta. Anything that has its own place is not part of the other klal, which is kol deporish miruba kaporish. Please remember those two very important rules. If something is porish, if something was not in the place where it normally is, so let's say you had a lot of butcher shops in town, you find a piece of meat in the middle of the street. You don't know where it came from, so it was porish. It's not in its own place. So then you go according to the rove of the places that it could have come from. But if it's kavua, so let's say you walked into a store, you bought some meat, you were told Lakewood doesn't have non-kosher meat, and then you don't even remember where you bought the meat, and then people tell you, what are you talking about? There's non-kosher butchers here. Well, if there's non-kosher butchers, and it's a question of what store you bought, that is called kavua. And kol kavua is kemech tzal mech. So that becomes a straight-out suffix. There's no rove. And in that case, you'd have to be machmir on the deraisa. So therefore, in that case, so of course, Rebbe would be made. Now, here comes a brand new sugya, which, thank heavens, the minhag is not to paskin like this sugya, because if it were, boy, would we up the creek without a paddle. Anyway, and this is called the new sugya of basar shenita'alem min ha'ayin, meat that you didn't have any direct hashgacha over, and nobody was looking at it, it instantly becomes aser. That's Rav Shita, which we're going to see. And thank heavens, as the Rambam says, the minhag is not to be machmer like this din of Rav. Now, a lot of this sugya is translated into the reality of the halacha because of a similar situation. So let me explain why we shouldn't get confused. There is a halacha of basar shenita'alem min ha'ayin, but it's not this halacha. That's the halacha of, let's say, you shipped a piece of meat by FedEx, That piece of meat arrives at its destination. The FedEx driver was not Jewish. If there was no sealing on that, that's why on the airport meals they have this double seal, right? So that double seal, that's the same halacha that we learned about when we were talking about yayin, stam yayin in your house, and there is a goy. Was it possible? You have to be choshesh that he was benasech b'yayin. So we spoke about what the double seal consisted of when we were learning that sugya. And the same thing is true over here. There is, that's called Basar Shenis Alim and Ayin in the sense that it was in the rishus of someone that we'd have to worry about that it was actually switched and that what you got is not what you sent. So that's like, you know, all these foolish people who take their beautiful diamond ring into this guy to tell, you know, how much is this ring worth? Takes it into the back of the room, takes out the diamond, puts in one of those artificial diamonds, brings it back and gives them the estimate, you know. Okay. So if you got to worry about diamonds, I mean, a piece of good brisket is worth a lot more than that, right? So if that guy had that brisket, he'd probably substitute some Safeway brisket and take that really delicious Jewish brisket. Okay. So anyway, that is true. You do need to have that same shmirah, but that's not what Rav is talking about. Rav is talking about if you left that piece of brisket on your dining room table and the phone rang, and you go into the kitchen to answer the phone and you come back and it's still sitting there on your table, you're not allowed to eat it. Why not? Well, you never know. After all, a bird might have come into the room, take that piece of meat, and just happened to have another piece of brisket, and he dropped the other piece of brisket. So obviously, this is not a real chashash, but this, according to Rav, was a chumrah that Rabbanan made that you have to make absolutely sure that the piece of meat, you know, that's the piece of meat, you connect it to that piece of meat, and it's the same idea that we had by kachim. Remember, by kachim, hesach hadaat makes kachim tameh. Right. So the moment you stop actually thinking about it, you're going to get involved in something else. Hesach Hadas is itself a tumah, especially by Parah Aduma. Remember, we talked about the different dinim of Hesach Hadas. In any event, it's sort of that kind of halacha. You've got to keep your eye on the target. And if the target is that piece of brisket, the moment your eye goes off the target, you don't know, Dr. Barry's got that cat. That cat's been waiting for that piece of brisket for who knows how long. Probably went into the non-kosher store, grabbed the piece of brisket, waiting for this moment. As soon as Dr. Barry went into the kitchen to answer the phone, pow, that was the end of the brisket. Little did he know. So that's
and he had it with catsup.
Okay. That's the old spelling, though, Barnea. Okay, so Omar Rav, Basar ki mishnita lemin ayin asur. Basically, how could that be? We just read a minute ago that Rebbe said, if you've got a place where all the butchers are kosher, and the stores, the little makolin, so those are like the supermarkets where they sell the meat and so on, but they don't do their own shnita. So then the makolin may not be Jewish, but the basar hanimtza b'yad oved kochavim is mutter, as we said before. So this means that according to Rebbe, it says, if you find a piece of meat, it's mutter. So what happened to the basar shenit alim in ayin? Wait a minute. I didn't say that the basar shenit alim in ayin has to be Jewish eyes. I said we are concerned for Dr. Barry's cat, or we are concerned for that little birdie. But if the Oved Kochavim had the meat in his rishus the whole time, he didn't allow a cat or a bird to come in and switch the meat on him. So that's not called mitalim and ayin. Again, if we're talking about the area, the local area is all kosher meat. So then we don't have to worry about it. So nimtza b'yad Oved Kochavim, that's different. Okay. I'll ask you from something else. How about the classic braita that describes the Gavi rule, which is that we go call the Porish, Miruba Kaporish? How about that braita? And here's what it says there. Classic case, you've got nine stores that are selling kosher meat. And you've got one store that sells non-kosher meat. Now, you didn't know anything about that. You were in town driving through, stopped at a store, and you bought some meat. And you have no idea where. You say, I don't know. I was driving by, I saw a store, and it had a big sign in front of the town that said, Ir Datera. And I figured if it's an Ir Datera, so everything is kosher, right? So I just bought it. So then, if any of them is lakach, if you don't know which store you bought from, so then it's usur. Why? Because it's kavua. And when something is kavua, we don't go according to the rove. Masha Inkain, if you found a piece of meat lying in the street, and you picked up the piece of meat lying in the street, that's perfectly kosher. You're kidding. No hechsher, nothing. Yeah, it's perfectly kosher because the Torah says you go according to the rove. And since most of the meat in town is kosher, so you're allowed to eat it. What's the problem? But how could you eat a piece of meat that you found in the street if nobody was watching it? How about Dr. Barry's cat? Everybody knows you got to worry about that cat or that bird. So how could it be kosher? You see clearly that Rav's idea of Basar Shenitaleh Min HaEin is absolutely wrong. No, it doesn't mean you found it in the street. You're right. If you found it in the street, you'd have to worry about Rav. But we're talking about you found it, meaning you found a guy that had a piece of meat. And, he opened up his jacket. Would you like a piece of meat? And you bought the piece of meat from him. And that was kosher. Okay, how about this Mishnah? Okay, this Mishnah we had in Machshirin, and I'm sure you remember it since we had it so recently. And it says there that if you have a case, this is sort of in the middle of the Mishnah, Matzah, you find meat, and the Mishnah doesn't say you raw meat, but it's obviously it does refer to raw meat. I don't know who put in here raw meat, but if you found basar, halecha charov tabachim, go according to most of the butchers, and most of the butcher shops are kosher, and you found a piece of meat. Now, I know, it seems to say if you found it anywhere, even lying in the street, and we're going to prove that in a moment. So then, if you find it, you go according to the rove. If most butchers are kosher, so then eat it and enjoy. But if it's cooked, now, then you got a problem because if it's cooked, if most of the people who would be eating meat in town are non-Jewish, then you have to worry about the issur of bishul akum because maybe a goy cooked it. And if a goy cooked it, you're certainly not allowed to eat it. You understand? This is the guy who's going to pick up a piece of meat from the ground. He's going to just cook it up without a hechsher, but chas v'shalom to take a chance on bishul akum, Different system of values over here. Anyway, that's what happens when you believe in rove. All kinds of amazing things can happen. So then, if it is cooked, you have to take a look at most of the meat eaters. If most meat eaters in town are not Jewish, so then you have to worry that this was cooked by a non-Jew. So you see, now we're not worried about Dr. Barry's cat because it says if you find it in the street, it's kosher. Now, I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me, yeah, but I already answered this. It's the same thing you showed me before, and I explained it to you. You're going to give me that old answer when it says you found it. Doesn't mean you found it lying in the street. It means you found it with this guy who gives you the old, would you like to buy a Rolex piece of meat? And that's what it's talking about. But that can't be what it's talking about. Because then why does it say if it was cooked, then you go according to the rove? What do you mean? If it was cooked, take a look at the guy who was trying to sell you the piece of meat. And, is he Jewish? If he's Jewish, then why should you worry that it was cooked by a non-Jew? If he's not Jewish, then you know it was cooked by a non-Jew. So what is the case? Obviously, the case is you really honestly did find it in the middle of the street. You have no idea whether a goy had been had it before or not, and you go according to the rove. How about if Rav is right, how can you go according to the rove? I mean, if you're telling me, now just see that inside. If you're going to give me the old story, Vikitem we're talking about there was an Ibsabiyada, so how did the Mishnah say, well, if it's cooked, you have to go according to the rove? I don't understand. Who gave you the meat? If you got it from an oven kachavim, so then fine, we know who cooked it. If you got it from a Jew, we know who cooked it. What's the difference whether it was a rove of one or the other? Well, now wait a minute. It still is not such a big problem to Rav, because we could be talking about a case like this. You're standing in the street. There's a guy walking ahead of you at the end of a block. He's got a backpack on, and as you watch, the backpack falls off of his back. He doesn't notice. He just keeps on walking. And you go running up to see what's in the backpack, and guess what's in that backpack? A delicious piece of brisket. Now, you know perfectly well Dr. Barry's cat never got to that because you were looking at it. So you know that it wasn't nisalim min ha'ayin, and that's what it's talking about. That if most of the meat in town is kosher, so you can assume that this meat is kosher. Since you don't know if the guy is Jewish or not, if it was cooked, then it depends on most of the people that eat meat, right? So then it would be, if most of the cooks are not Jewish, you still won't be able to eat the meat because of the suffix of the Bishul Akum.
But
Okay.
what if I brought my cat from Schrodinger and people don't know that?
Who's talking? Who's talking?
Me, Barry.
Well, you were talking about Schrodinger's cat? No, this.
Yeah.
Rebbe, that was a perfect pun.
Oh my gosh. You see what you've caused, Barnea?
Yeah, they're constantly trying to add a new clause.
You saw him from afar. That's simple. Okay. What about the Mishnah that we had in Shkolim? The Mishnah in Shkolim, remember that Mishnah was talking about where you find a piece of meat, if you find it in the Azara, and is it considered to be a Bosra Oila, depending on how it's cut. If it's cut like steaks, then it would be a chatas. If you find it in Yerushalayim, it's shlomim. You find it all over. Anyway, so you remember that Mishnah, and this is like the middle of that Mishnah. You find a piece of meat in the street in Yerushalayim. So then, if it's cut up into Evarim, so it's like just big pieces that are not cut into meat slices, that's the way you would cut up an animal that's on its way to the garbage dump. And therefore, you'd have to assume that it's an Avela. But if it's cut into steaks, so then it's kosher because most of the meat there is kosher in Yerushalayim. But how could it be mutter if you find it in the street? You never know if, now that we know who Schrodinger's cat actually was, it could have been there even at the time of the Mishnah, you know. I mean, why not? And therefore, if it says over here you're allowed to eat that meat, it means that Rav is wrong. Now, don't tell me this case is talking about that you see the guy that actually had it on his backpack, because if that was the case over here, why would you assume that a guy who's carrying pieces, big pieces, a varim, in his backpack is carrying around an avela? That's ridiculous. Then why would we think it's an avela? He wasn't, obviously wasn't going to the garbage dump. So it must be that we didn't see him from afar. Ah, but I got you with this one, man. You're only asking the kasha on Rav, right? That's your only problem. That Rav says Basashin is Alam and I and is Aser. Well, did you forget how Rav himself explained this Mishnah? Aren't you only asking this question according to Rav? But Rav gave his pshat in this Mishnah. Ha'itmar Allah, we've learned on that Mishnah that Rav says when the Mishnah says that it's mutter mishum nevela, he didn't mean it's mutter that it's mutter in the gvulim. He meant it's mutter mishum nevela in terms of tuma of nevela. He never said it's mutter to eat it. There's the other problem. You never know if all of a sudden is going to appear right next to it, just at that moment, Schrodinger's cat. Whereas Levi Omer, no, I don't believe in that. It's mutarot b'achila. Of course it means it's kosher. I don't buy into this Schrodinger cat business and that spooky action from a distance, and we don't believe in that kind of stuff. Anyway, so if that's the case, Rav doesn't have a problem with the Mishnah because he already explained it. Now, the truth is, we never heard Rav say this. Rav never said anything about Basash and Nisalim and Ayin, but from the way that Rav Paskin in various situations, we figured out that he must hold that it's usher because of Schrodinger's cat. It's Michalola Itman. The Rav Yosef Amavra, the Ishtatis. There was this ferry boat that used to take Rav across the Ishtatis River. And at the dock, he sees Chazya Lahu Gavra. He sees this guy who was cleaning off an animal's head, a Jewish guy with a big beard and everything. He's in, and it definitely was kosher, you know. It couldn't be Esav or anything. And he was being Mechaver Reshit. So he was cleaning off this head in the river water, and he dropped it. So he dropped the head into the river. So he goes, grabs a net, Ozo Aite Silta, throws it in so he can get his head out of the water, brings it up, and guess what? Up come two heads. So Shada Asik train. So Rav says to the guy, well, this is quite a river, huh? Avde Nami Hachi. So I guess this is normal around here. So obviously you can't eat these heads, because if you've got a new head over here, there might be many heads. I don't know. And therefore, there's no way that you could rely on eating it. So
maybe two heads are worse than one.
Well, that's the question. If you would have only brought up one head, so then why wouldn't have been a Batsush and a Salomon Ayin? That wasn't the question, because I could see Schrodinger's cat. We know cats don't like to find themselves in the middle of the water, never suddenly appears in the middle of the water, even if you're thinking about it. So that wasn't the question. We knew that the cat wasn't there and the bird wasn't there. So he wasn't chashish for bazush and esalim and ayin. So he answered it. So Rav Kahana and Rav Asi said to Rav, well, I don't understand. Don't you believe in the rove? I mean, most meat in this town is kosher meat. So why can't you just eat it anyway? Because even if you found another head, most heads would be kosher heads. So the Isura Shriche, the Aterilo Shriche, why are you saying that you can't eat it? Maybe both heads are kosher, and since this is a kosher town, you should be able to eat both heads. Why'd you tell them it's usher? And Rav said to them, well, it's more likely that there's non-kosher heads. But that's not true, because all of the butchers and Rove, the butchers in town, were kosher. So how come all of a sudden we are worried that there's more non-kosher meat? Obviously, Rav holds that meat could have come from anywhere. Because, heck, if Dr. Barry's cat is loose, you never know where he's been. And if he has wings and he's not even a cat, then he could have brought it from any place around. And so, as the crow flies, this meat might have come from some other place. And therefore, I mean, that's how we understood it, Rav was saying, because we know all the local meat was kosher. So apparently Rav said, well, you can't rely on local meat, which means that you've got to be worried about flying meat. And that means you never know when a little birdie brought that meat here. So therefore, it must be that he holds a Batsush and a Salim and a Ayin. And why else would he have said this? But Rav never openly said that. He never said Batsush and a Salim and a Ayin is usher. We can just recognize it must be what he holds. Says the Gemara again, as we saw before. Any place that I point out to you that this was not openly said means that there's a loose screw somewhere. Because otherwise, I wouldn't have to tell you. Now, if you're telling me Michlala Itmar, it means there's a way around this strange conclusion about Batsush and Esalim and Ayin. But what would be the way around it? V'chi Michlala, my? What? I mean, so what if it's Michlala? There's no other explanation, is there? Oh, but there is, you see. Because the dock, now this is nothing personal, not to either of you, but the dock was actually a place where Goyim would land all the time. And what are you going to say? The airport, the meat in the airport is going to go according to the city that the airport is part of? I mean, there's people coming here from all over the place. And therefore, if you find a sandwich in Newark Airport, you can't say, well, most of the meat in New York is kosher. You have to say it would have to be most of the meat in the world, because this is the world, Newark Airport. Well, so was that dock. People would stop all the time from all over, and you never know when someone might have dropped a piece of meat. Therefore, that may be what he meant. Maybe he never meant that we're worried about birds flying by. He meant we're worried about planes flying by and people getting out of the planes and dropping their meat. Now, can you explain me? I mean, do you seriously believe this? I mean, how would Rav ever have eaten meat in his life? I mean, like, he's going to buy a piece of meat and he's convinced that this meat was under constant supervision from the moment it was shechted, and nobody ever left this piece of meat out of their sight so that Barry's cat wouldn't appear. I mean, that's impossible. So Rav Echiachel Bisra, how could Rav ever eat meat? Well, he went to the Shlachtos, watched them doing the Shlita, and then he kept it under his strict glare from that moment on until the cholent was cooked. So must be b'shaita. He bought it at the moment of Shlita, delo olim einimine, and he never stopped looking at it. Or maybe there's a simple answer. He actually dealt with the meat, and here is how this sugya enters into our everyday life. He dealt with the meat as if he was shipping it by FedEx. So how would he have treated it if he was shipping it by FedEx? He would have put it into a double wrap with a seal. And of course, it would have a hologram on it, the whole jazz, right? And that hologram for sure would have scared away with Schrodinger's cat. I mean, now he's up against the quantum world himself. And so that is the way he would have shipped it. And therefore, that was the way he ate it. Since he's going to be leaving it in his kitchen, it had to have a hologram on it. But what can you do? But it certainly doesn't mean he would never be able to eat meat. Or maybe he actually cut the meat in such a way that there's no possible way that a birdie would ever have found a piece of meat like that. And what is that? He put a simen in the meat. So he cut it like in a strange way. Like, for instance, Rabbi Bar Avuna used to cut all of his meat into triangles, because that way, if anybody tried walking off on either people, the workers or whatever, they tried any kind of fancy stuff with his meat, it would be immediately identifiable and he would catch them right then and there. So Rav used that simen in the actual cut, which we saw before. Remember, we had yesterday the din of the chitucha da akum is nikar, and therefore you can rely on that to make sure there's no gid anasha, and you got to dig the gid. Don't forget Naftali's new song, which is available on the Daf group of Dig the Gid. It's currently but remember, it just came out yesterday. It's number 31 on the New York Times list, but probably heading up there in no time at all. I didn't check this morning. Rav Havika Ozil Levei Ravchana, who was his son-in-law. So Rav was on his way to Rav Chanan's home, and he comes to the dock. Again, nothing personal. He comes to the dock, and the ferry boat is just pulling in. As, oh my gosh, this is amazing, says Rav to himself. If the ferry boat comes just when I come, and I don't have to sit around waiting here half the day, that is such a good sign. Obviously, the party at my son-in-law's house is going to be one heck of a party. So Omar, so he said, the ferry boat's coming in? Mavraka ati la'api? Yuma tavalagav. There's going to be heavy-duty celebrating inside. Anyway, meaning when he gets to Rav Chana. So, crosses the river, travels to his son-in-law's house, and he's standing there at the door. And Odik Bebiza de Dasha, so there's a little peephole in that door. So Rav looks through the peephole, you know, and he sees what's going on. And he sees Chazi Chevata de Talia. He sees these animals that are hanging in the kitchen that were going to be cooked for the big party that they were making. And he knocks on the door, Torah Fabava. Everybody, Rav is here, my gosh, the entire house comes out to greet Rav. So now to Kule Amalape, everyone, including even the butchers who were busy with the kitchen and they were preparing it, Atatafchinami, even the butchers came. Now, if you think Rav looked at these people, he was looking through the people into the kitchen the whole time. Oh, yes, indeedy. Lo Olim Rav Einemine, didn't look aside for 1 minute. He wanted to make sure that that meat would remain kosher. Amar Lahu, so he says to the butcher, you see, if I hadn't been staring at this and I relied on you, idiots, so Echu Hashta Safit Luisur Levnei Brat, you would have been feeding my grandchildren Isser. So obviously he was worried about that Rotsushin is Alay Minahain. Fine. Okay, this is an interesting problem for the Gemara before us, does this point out. I mean, we're looking, how do we know that Rav holds Bosesh and Solomon Ayin? Why isn't this story itself a proof of Bosesh and Solomon Ayin? Does this is Mechalik because maybe where Rav Chanan lived, it was a place where Rov of the local meat wasn't kosher. So Rav didn't eat that meat. What do you mean he didn't eat that meat? Why not? I mean, he was looking at it the whole time. It was perfectly kosher. Isn't that the whole point? Imi Shuma Alume, what, he didn't eat that meat because it was Bosesh and Solomon and Ayin? I thought you said, hello, Yami. It was not Bosesh and Solomon and Ayin because Rav was staring at it the whole time. Maybe it's because the Nochish. Maybe it's because he had been over, he felt he had been over on the Isser of Nichush, Lo Tenachashu. Now, Alon, yes, welcome home. So now, if he was, why was he over on Lotan Achashu? Because when he went down to the ferry dock and he saw the ferry coming, he said, oh, what a wonderful sign. The ferry is coming. That means there's going to be a brilliant feast coming up, right? So you're not allowed to do that because the Torah says, Lo Tenachashu. So that's like a silly superstition. And you're not allowed to have any of those kinds. It's like saying black cat, not Chashal Barry's cat, a black cat crossed my path. It's bad luck. I mean, you're not allowed to do that. So maybe that's why. So he felt that since he was over on that, he should not be nene from that su'una. So knowing the way Rav might be thinking, and honestly, I was thinking about that myself. How did Rav say something like ferry boat coming? That's a good sign. I thought we don't believe in signs. So maybe that's why. No, that cannot be because this is a very important Gavi rule. If he will please bring forth his magic wand or pen, just looks like a pen. But question is he still there? Yes, there he is. Okay. That's Schrodinger's Gavi. He just appears when you need him. Okay, so take out that magic wand and write this amazing halacha. Kol nachash she'eno keliezer eved Avraham u'chiyonatan ben Shaul eno nachash. You're talking about the definition of the Isser in the Torah of Lotan Achashu. It's defined by the kind of nichush that Eliezer eved Avraham did, which, of course, is referring to his saying, well, if the girl comes out and she says, you know, I'll water your camels, the whole jazz. So that's a nichush. Or Yonatan. Remember the story with Yonatan. That was brilliant, right? So they were out there. Yonatan was alone with just the nar that was with him. And they see these plishtim, you know, and they're on the other side of the mountain. They were on one mountain, they're facing these plishtim. And meanwhile, Shaul is fighting, and everybody's involved in this battle. And so Yonatan says to the kid, you know, why don't we just tackle this ourselves? What do we need? Yeah, it's just a bunch of plishtim. We're easy. We can just go and take them. So the kid says to them, okay, I'm with you. You ready? I'm ready. So, okay, the two guys are going to go, and they're going to destroy the whole Machane Plishtim. So Yonatan says, okay, here's how we're going to know what to do. If they say to us, you know, we'll shout at them. If they say to us, you just stay there, we're going to come and get you, man. Okay, then we don't go. But if they say, all right, you come here and watch what's going to happen to you, then we know that that is a sign that God has given them into our hands and we'll wipe them out. And that's what happens in the end of the song. Okay, so those are considered to be Nachash. Why? Because those were simonim that they relied on to actually do something. So Yonatan, he actually went up to attack the Plishtim based on that sign. And Eliezer ben Avram, he went and he actually took the girl based on that sign. He didn't even know who she was, as the pasuk says, which he didn't let on to the parents, but that was the fact. So obviously he totally relied on that. That is what Nichush means. It doesn't mean saying, oh, this is a good sign because the day started off good and I actually found a place to recharge my Tesla. That's a raya that it's going to be a good day for me. No, that's not included in the Isser Nichush. So all I did would be, I just said, this is a good sign. They started off on the right foot. So that wouldn't be a reason. Now, meanwhile, of course, you have the obvious question, which so many of the Mefarshim talk about. So what does that mean, that we held that Eliezer ben Avram practiced Nichush? And we held that Yonatan ben Shaul practiced Nichush? Of course it doesn't mean that. When they gave that simon, the simon was a simon that actually made complete rational sense. It means that type of simon. So obviously Eliezer wasn't just saying, well, if a girl comes out wearing an orange dress and a red scarf, then that's the girl. If that would have been real, Nefesh would have been usher. But for him to make an extremely rational simon, look, if this is a girl that's got that kind of gemilut chasadim and so on, then that's the right girl that I want. That's not called Nichush. That's just making some intelligent way of seeing the situation. Same thing with Yonatan. Yonatan says, look, if they basically are ready to say, we'll get you, boy, we'll come, you just stand there, we'll get you. Okay, so then that means that they're feeling their oats. Masha Enkein, if they're nervous and too scared to come and get us, you know, they say, okay, you come up here where they got all their support. That's a sign that these guys have no courage and we can get them. So that made sense. So that's not called Nichush at all. That's the point. But what he's saying is, in order to be Nichush, it would have to be something that you would rely on, the way that Eliezer ben Avraham relied and the way that Yonatan ben Shaul relied. And that's the meaning of this brand new Gavi rule, assuming that that didn't take place maybe in the future and maybe 200 years from now we put it in. I don't know. Okay, Schrodinger Gavi, you should make it local for 2025. Okay, hopefully it's in our current list. Oh, 26, how do you like that? I got locked into... All right, so why wouldn't Rav eat? Rav wouldn't eat because this was not a Seudas Mitzvah. It's not as if they were making a wedding or anything. They were making a big party. So Rav is coming to town to a party. Rav doesn't eat at parties. So it was a Seudah Reshut Havoy, and Rav would not be nene from a Seudah that was not a Seudat Mitzvah. And basically, I mean, we know that the Gemara says that Talmud Chacham shouldn't be eating at a Seudah that isn't a Seudat Mitzvah. Now, there were different Talmidei Chachamim that took signs, meaning this is a good sign, the day is going well. Rav used to take the ferry boat as a wonderful sign. If this ferry boat was coming in as he came down to the dock, wow. Shmuel, he would check a sefer. So what is that? He would do the gross girl. So he would open up a sefer, and a pasuk that the sefer came out on, he would say that that's a sign, but it doesn't mean that he relied on that sign. He considered it to be a way in which he could feel good about something or be nervous about something. Rabbi Yochanan used to check by asking a kid from Cheder, what pasuk did you learn today? And that's called Psokli Psukecha. Tell me the pasuk you learned today in Cheder. And if it was a nice pasuk, then that's what he would actually use as a synod, but it wasn't something that he would rely on. Now, here, by the way, as long as, and this is an example of Rabbi Yochanan saying, Psokli Psukecha. So all the years that Rav was alive in Bavel, whenever Rabbi Yochanan would write a letter to him from Eretz Yisrael, he would write the letter to Rabbeinu Shebebavel. But when Rav died and Shmuel became the Gadol in Bavel, he actually started writing to him to our friend in Bavel, instead of writing to him to our Rabbeinu. Now, this was very problematic because, I mean, Lamaisa people would see the letter, Talmidim would see the letter, and it was like a zilzul in Shmuel. And why would Rabbi Yochanan do that? So obviously, Rabbi Yochanan would only do that because he had no choice. He felt he's not going to call somebody Rabbeinu who doesn't deserve the title. And he felt there was nothing that he had to learn from Shmuel, and he didn't have an excuse to call him Rabbeinu. He would love to write Rabbeinu just for his honor, but if there was one thing he felt that he could learn from Shmuel, so then he would have written him Rabbeinu Shebebavel. So obviously, he didn't think there was anything he could learn from him. So Shmuel said to himself, there's nothing at all that he could learn from me? Lo yada li mide de Rabbi Ana, don't I know one thing that I could teach him? Well, I'm a great astronomer, so maybe what I should do is show him how brilliant I am, and then he'll see that he's got an excuse to call me Rabbeinu. So Shmuel goes, and without even looking at his computer, he wrote him all of the Molad Alavonas for the next 60 years, and all of the Ibur Shana for the next 60 years. And Rabbi Yochanan gets this letter and says, well, that's great. So he knows fifth grade math, this kid. How do you like that? This is the most he can show me. Hashta Chushbana Ba'alma, he knows a little bit of math. What a joke. So then Shmuel decided, all right, we're going to really show him our stuff. So Katav and Shadalai Tlesar Gamle Sveikatri Fasa. He wrote obviously it's an exaggeration, but he wrote him 13 camelfuls of sveikas, of trefa. If it says kasav, so then it means it didn't literally send the trefas, but he sent all of the lists. And each one of them was a whole analysis of the sugya. Would this be included? So then Rabbi Yochanan was that impressed, and boy, big time. Says Rabbi Yochanan to himself, boy, this guy is really, he's got a lot to teach me. Eastly Rafa Bavel. Now I have somebody who's my Rebbe. I'm going to go visit him. I mean, I was just looking for an excuse. Now I really need to meet this man. So he's about to leave to Bavel, and he says to a kid from the cheder, Psokli Psukecha. So the kid says to him, the pasuk we learned today was Ushmuel Meit. So Rabbi Yochanan says, oh dear, looks like Shmuel died. I guess I don't have to go. Now Shmuel never died, but my son. He said, Shmamida Nachmavshid Shmuel, Velo, he Shmuel was perfectly healthy, but Lo Shachim Shmuel, but Min HaShamayim, they wanted to give Rabbi Yochanan a good excuse not to go. So he read that pasuk. Fine. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, there are things that often are a portent of things to come. So let's say you buy a new house, or you had a new child, or you marry a new woman, and then things start going well. You know, so you open up, let's say, three different businesses, and those businesses all go well. And then, or let's say you write a new song and it gets on the hit parade and you're about to open three new businesses. Then you should know that that is a good sign that things are going to go well. So go order those three things. Buy it. Tinok v'isha. Sa'afa b'she'en nachash. You can't rely on it for anything, but it's definitely a concept of a good simon. You can feel good about it. Omer Rabbi Elazar, only if it happened three times that the three things that you did worked out really well after you built the house or after you married that woman. So who these chazik klata zimne? We see that from the pasuk, because Yaakov Avinu said to the Shvatim when they wanted to take Binyamin, so he said to them, Yosef enenu, v'Shimon enenu, and then if you take Binyamin, anything happens to him, et Binyamin tikachu alayayu kulana. So then that means at the third time he took it as a semen. Anyway, what would be if these pieces of meat were tied up on a string and they were all hanging on that string? So the whole thing was becharuzin. So do we need to worry? Now, the fact that Dr. Barry actually pulls the Schrodinger cat stunts himself, you know, that he's clearly, he's just apparently entangled with something or other, maybe with Houdini, and disappears on us like this. What about if the meat was tied up with a whole row of meat? I mean, we're going to be chayshesh that then, like the cat, or actually the bird, untied that piece of meat, put another piece of meat in, and they just did the whole thing. So becharuzin mahu. But what would be the din over there? So Rav said to him, al tehi shote becharuzin. So of course, charuzim is a double meaning. This was actually a Barnea comment. And the charuzim are the lyrics of the song that just made it big on the hit parade. So don't be an idiot in poetry, is what it's basically saying. Of course, it's a simon. And another one was that it wasn't actually an answer to a question and it wasn't a play on words. Ikeni Amrei Ravuna Marav said straight out, if the meat is hanging on charuzim, then it is a good simen. Rav Nachum ben Arda, he once came to Rav Kahana, who lived in Pum Nahara, and it was Erev Yom Kippur. And these birds, they came along, and they were dropping liver and kidney meat on the street, which obviously they had picked up by a butcher somewhere, and they're throwing it all over the street. So Rav Kahana says, pick it up and eat it. It's perfectly kosher because it's Erev Yom Kippur today. And therefore, all over the place, these Jews, they're making a big seuda for Yom Kippur. And so most of the meat that's being shechted today is all kosher meat. And therefore, this must be kosher. So eat it. Today's a good day for eating it based on rov. Okay, here's a machlokas, actually Rishonim, from Rashi and Tosfos, about whether this means that he's saying that Bosesh and Nesalim and Ayin is kosher. Because Tosfos Tainas, that even if you hold that Bosesh and Nesalim and Ayin is not kosher, like Rav, the point that Rav Kahana was making is that all over the world, so in any town, wherever this meat came from, even if it was flown in by birds, it would still be from kosher meat, because wherever there's a town with Jews, there's always going to be meat today on Erev Yom Kippur. Rabbi Chiya Bar Ovin, now Rabbi Chiya Bar Ovin once lost a karkasha benidana. So he had been making some, stuffed intestines. Heck, tell me what the Yiddish word is.
Kishka.
Thank you. So he had some kishka. And he dropped the kishka, and it was in his wine cellar. He couldn't find it. It felt, you know how it goes. Whenever you drop something and it just disappears, so you know that it went into hyperspace, and you just give up looking for it. And then 10 years later, maybe you'll find it, whatever, right? So anyway, his kishka disappears, and he comes back later and he finds it. So now he wanted to know whether it would be usher. Is it the same kishka? Also, v'kami de Ravuna. To ask him, does he have a right? I mean, maybe he just found a piece of kishka. I don't know. So Ravuna said to him, is there a simen on this? No. Well, I have no way of like positively saying that it had, you know, like a mark on some side. Well, but do you recognize it? Does it look to you like the same kishka? Yes, it does. I have Tvias Ayin in it. Well, said Ravuna, if that's the case, you can rely on your own identification. If it looks like the same kishka, rely on its being the same kishka. Remember that we have this din when it comes to hashavat aveda, right? if the person has a simen, so we'll give it to a person on the basis of a simen. If the person does not have a simen, but he's a completely reliable person, so we know he's a Talmud Chacham who never lies, and he tells you, but I recognize it. I can't tell you how I recognize it, but I know that this is my wallet. I mean, it's 100%. Can I describe to you, you know, that 3.2 centimeters from the left side, there's a little crack in the leather? No, I can't do that. But if it's the Talmud Chacham, we rely on Tvias Ayin. So what he was asking him is, do you have Tvias Ayin? He says, yeah, okay. So then you know it's yours, so go eat it. Same thing happened to Rabbi Hanina Chuzah, and he had lost a whole big piece that was made up from along the back of the animal. And he lost it and found it afterwards. And he asked Rabbi Nachman, can I rely on this being the same meat that I lost? So I said, come to Rabbi Nachman. So Rabbi Nachman says, do you have a simon? No. But do you recognize it? Yes. So go take it. Zilshko. And another case was not with meat, but this time with chelas. Chelas is like very rare, very expensive. And Rav Nosson Barabai lost a whole spool of chelas thread. And then later he finds it. And he comes to Rav Chisda and he says, can I rely on this being kosher chelas? Omale, Yisrach Simona Begave? No. But do you recognize it? Yisrach Viodina Begave? Yes. So then, fine, go use it for your tzitzit, no problem. In Kain Zilshko, as long as you recognize it, it's okay. Omar Rava, you know, I used to think, Mirei Shava, I mean, I used to think that a simen is better than Tvias Ayin, because, I mean, a simen is objectively verifiable, whereas when you come to Tvias Ayin, it's something that only you're recognizing in your own self, but, you know, we don't have any objective indication. I always thought that objective is more valuable, and I saw that we give back to anybody. We'll give back an Aveda based on his telling us a simen, but we won't give it back, unless he's a Talmud Chacham, we won't give it back with Tvias Ayin. But now that I see all of these Dinim that you just told me on, that we're relying on Tvias Ayin for Isurim, like Nevela and Tcheles and so on. So then I thought, you know what? Actually, if the basis is a true recognition, that would mean that Tvias Ayin, if you have a right to rely on your Tvias Ayin at all, so then that means that Tvias Ayin is even better because it is built on much more information that is just too complex, and it forms this holistic picture that's more reliable. So if I'm seeing that you can rely on it, that means that it's even better. So Tvias Eino would be better than an objective simen. And the truth is, I mean, that obviously we rely on Tvias Ayin totally. I mean, even for the most chomer isurim. Because look, if somebody's blind, how is he allowed to sleep with his wife? How does he know that's his wife? Maybe it's his sister pretending to be his wife. I mean, I don't know. So if he's allowed to sleep with her without being able to identify her because he can't see her, so obviously he has a Tvias Ayin. Well, she sounds like my wife. Okay, sounds like your wife. Your wife, are you sure it's her voice? I'd never make a mistake like that. I mean, that's like listening to a song sung by Chayin and it's really somebody else. I mean, that couldn't be. So you can absolutely rely on that voice. And anyway, how can anybody sleep with his wife at night if he can't see her? I mean, how does he know it's his wife? Must be because Bitvias Eina Dekal. So we rely. This is what's known as voice recognition. So voice recognition is considered to be kosher. Okay, so if that's the case, if it's kosher, so then obviously it means that you are making that basis built on a lot of information that's a lot more valuable than just a couple of pieces of identifying things that could be given over objectively. So if you can rely on it, so we obviously rely on all of these cases. Look, It's obvious, isn't it? I mean, just consider the practical implications of the difference of having information that's objective versus having information that's a construct of more than you're capable of supplying the information. So let's imagine you are trying to get somebody out of the base of Knesset, right? And he's got a telephone call or there's an emergency. So you tell somebody, listen, go in and call out the guy wearing the green glass frames and the orange hat, you know? So maybe he'll find him, maybe he won't find him. But if he knows who the guy is and you say, do me a favor and call Moshe Andel, he'll just go straight up to Moshe Andel. And if he's got a lot of nerve and doesn't worry about bears, he'll call him straight out. So how is that? You didn't even explain exactly how he's... Well, that's the point. You can try to describe a guy, but that's nowhere near as good as the person actually knowing the guy. That's the point. So if that's the case, it's clear that this is a better siman. I think I skipped one, right? Yeah. I skipped the Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Edwin Misharitza, sorry. Teda, I'll bring you a raya that it's better. Because look, if you go into court and you say, I saw a guy with a mole on his left cheek and a birthmark between his eyes, and I positively identify that's the guy that murdered Joe. We're not going to kill that guy based on your silly mole and birthmark. We don't. There might be plenty of people that have a mole on their left cheek and a birthmark, or we're certainly not going to accept that as identification, are we? But if you say, I saw, and you identify the guy, I saw Robert, and we're not going to say, well, how do you know it was Robert? What do you mean, how do I know it was Robert? I know Robert my whole life. Well, tell us how you know it's Robert. No, we don't say that. If a guy says, I know it's Robert, then I know it's Robert, and we will kill him. So the din in the besdin is defined only by tvias ayin. It is not defined, as it is in a goyisha court, it's not defined by simonim. You have to say, I know this person personally. And if you identify him with a simon, planya v'hai simana kotonavshe, lo katlinale. We're not going to put the guy to death on the basis of a mole. But on the other hand, ilo amri yisrael tvias ayna begave, of course, katlinan le. And then the next case that I mentioned before, amri vashi. Look, it's obviously, if you need to get somebody out of shul, and you say to a person, call so-and-so who's got the following identifying characteristics. You know, he's wearing such and such a coat. He's got a mole on his left cheek. Maybe he'll see him. Maybe he won't. Safek yada by safek lo. But if he knows who the guy is, and you say, call Robert from the show, of course he'll find him. V'ilu itle tviot eina begave, ki chazile yadalais. He will be able to identify him immediately, which proves on a simple practical level, holistic knowledge is much more real than specific things that you put together to draw a rational conclusion from. There we go. So, it means truth is always better than proof.